That's the only thing. No, you guys don't have to vote for the chairman. You just have to decide.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't care. Travis can do it if he wants to. Because we don't have one.
Have one what?
A chairman today.
Oh.
You want to do it?
We don't have to vote for the chairman or anything. Just say
You do it.
All right.
You do it. Move.
All right. Order in the court, please. It is 4:01. Let's get this going here. First item, minutes from December 18th meeting.
I make a motion that we accept the minutes from the December 18th, 2023 Water and Sewer Commission meeting.
I'd second that motion.
Got a motion and a second. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. All right. Financial reports. Yay! Hey! Welcome.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Jared Sigmund. Appreciate the warm welcome. I guess it's 3/5 of you.
It's the good part.
Well, y'all are easy to get into it even at the meeting here, so appreciate that. No, it is a return home for me. I grew up in Rogers. Would have graduated as a Mountie, except that I was homeschooled all 12 years, so I took some concurrent classes at the community college up at NWAC and moved on down to Arkansas Tech University and got a degree there and figured out I couldn't really do anything with a communications degree, so I went back to school at U of A for public administration and got a job in Metro Atlanta. And I have been there for the last 14 years, working for the city of Smyrna there in a variety of capacities, most recently in their finance department there. Decided to kind of stick with that, so I've gone back to school yet again for a Master of Professional Accountancy, which I'm almost there. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. So,
good.
Brent gave me an opportunity to come back home and do accounting here in my hometown. And you know, my wife and I and our two girls, we had a good thing going in Smyrna. They gave us a lot of reasons to stay. Had a great community there, but we always said for the right opportunity, we would look to move back. My family is still here. Her family is still here. So it was a good opportunity for us. Appreciate it, Brent, and everybody here has helped kind of ease me into this a little bit, and I feel like they're spoon-feeding me, which is great, appreciated. But there will be a lot to catch up on. I've taken a whole lot of notes over the past 2 weeks, and I'm here today to report on some numbers from December, so how about that?
Very good.
We're excited to have you here, Brent, as well. Welcome.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Well done.
Well, I know you guys report on billed revenue and consumption every month, and you can see those numbers for the water and sewer department on your screen. I might just zoom in a little bit here if I can work that control. So on the water department, we've got billed revenue for December up 15% from the prior December, and consumption is up about 11% year over year. In the sewer department, you see similar numbers. Billed revenue up 16.5%, sewer consumption up 11.5%. And then profit, you've got the water department reporting a profit of $481,000 for December of 2023. That's compared to a profit of $120,000 for December of 2022. That's a pretty big jump there. You can see a little bit of the explanation with revenues increasing by about $500,000 and expenses also increasing, but not by as much. If you ever want to double check our math here, of course you can take the difference between those revenues and expenses, the increases there. And then I think 497 minus 136 comes out to 361. And that'll be the plug that explains the difference between your $120,000 for December of 2022 and $481,000 for this past December. And you see the same thing down here on the sewer department. We're reporting a profit for December of $614,000. That's compared to a profit of $336,000 for December of 2022, with revenues increasing by $559,000, and expenses increasing by $281,000. For both of these, on the water and the sewer department, when we, under that bullet point about reported profit, you'll see that we have posted adjustments for interest income. As you probably know, our investments in RCDs are compounded quarterly, which means that we get a statement from the bank once every 3 months reporting on the interest that we've earned. However, for accounting purposes, we like to recognize that interest income smoothly over each month. And we have been recording that accrued interest and that interest income each month, but since March of last year, we've been using an estimate that's been really far too low for what we've been earning in interest over the past year. So we had to do a true-up entry in December to fix that, to recognize the income that we should have been recognizing over the last 9 months. And we did that, which is why you're going to see a kind of a big bump there in interest income for the month of December. There's really no reason why we can't get that number pretty finely tuned and get it pretty pinpoint each month in terms of the accrued interest. So we're going to work to do that and get that revenue stream kind of smoothed out each month so we don't see the big bumps that we see here in December. Then we show fiscal year-to-date collections for access and impact fee revenues. As I understand it, these are kind of like the proxy for new customers and new activity in town. You can see for FY24 on the water side, we've got $408,000 fiscal year-to-date revenue, and giving you just the two prior years through December for a little bit of context there. We're up over the prior year, and then 2 years back, it was a little bit more. And that's similar on the sewer side. Fiscal year-to-date collections for access and impact fee revenues, FY24, $787,000. And then you can see there the little bit of history for FY23 and 22. Back up in the water department, year-to-date profit is more than the prior year by $403,000. And in the sewer department, year-to-date profit is more than the prior year by $456,000. Of course, we got that grant in there as well. I think that's actually an ARPA grant, $5 million awarded to us, half of which we have we've received now as reimbursement for expenses with, I think, our plan to hopefully get reimbursed for the other half of that come November or so when we're making our third payment on that dryer equipment at the plant. And our last bullet point down here for other financial reporting items, we show you that total restricted and unrestricted funds are $50.3 million for December 2023, which is an overall increase of $4.4 million from the prior December. Water funds have increased by approximately $2.3 million and sewer funds by $2.05 million. And of that $50.3 million, $8.8 is restricted for various uses. I'll leave it right there unless you've got any specific questions. And this is just a memo in the packet. Of course, you've got the income statement and balance sheet and end of month cash report and other miscellaneous reports. So feel free to reach out and again, appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for letting me have a go at it. I hope to give you good service for quite a while to come.
Yeah, great to have you, Jerry.
Great to have you.
Hopefully you didn't find it in financial shambles.
Hey,
it looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Listen, Matt has been doing a great job for you. I can't imagine losing your top accountant for so long and still keeping things going as smoothly as it appears to have been going. So yep. got a good team here.
Absolutely.
Well, the worst thing is finding extra income and interest income. That's a good thing. That's a good way to come in. One thing I would like you to look at, I know we're kind of at a midpoint, the information that we receive is month, year over year. So we received December. We compared December this year versus December last year, and then also the year-to-date number. One thing, and nothing that's in a big hurry, but and I don't know how easy it is, but do we also take a look at, we prepared a budget, we have a budget and how we are to budget. I'd like to see at some point, not, it had to be depth, That's one thing to compare year over year, but also we'll go back and we prepared a budget, we approved a budget, and I'd like to see maybe a comparison at some point. Here we are, this is what we budgeted year to date, this is where we're at year to date, just as we track budget along with the year over year, if that makes any sense.
I'm glad you brought that up. We've had those discussions and now is the time. This financial memo is just what we've been doing, and we spoke about there's better visual things we can do, there's more information. This is a good time for us to change. He's had 2 weeks.
And
so moving forward, let us know what you would, and we'll put together some stuff as well. Again, we've had the conversation. There's a lot, there's probably some more efficient ways to get this data to you.
Well, just as you look, and again, it's good when you look at December to December, and there are some things that jump out December to December. The year to date looks fine. But I also am always, you know, where are we at based upon where we thought we would be? Are we on budget? Where would we have variances? Why do we have variances? And then, you know, really, and then as you get closer to the end of the year, I know, you know, sometimes you've got accounts that, you know, is there going to be carryover or things that need to be spent? So just as time permits and as you get deeper into it, I'd like to see just here's where we're at actual to budget.
We have had some of those, haven't we?
I don't know that
other sheets you always had.
Yeah, I don't know that Travis, I probably haven't. I know that where I looked at them was a year, and then you'll see occasionally, I think I said last month.
Yeah.
Payroll looked off a little bit to me, and so just as you go forward, I just want to make sure that did we do a good job in budgeting? And then if we did, are we, you know, pretty close to it? So just as time
passes. Yeah, typically. Yeah, year-to-date profit is more than prior years. But yeah, there's a lot. There's a few other things we can do.
I sure thought that we have that.
Just as time, again, 2 weeks in.
Yeah.
I'm trying to overwhelm, but just the same time period.
And I'll guarantee you he's better with spreadsheets.
Well, and I'd also say, like you said, if there's something that that you all see that you'd like to do different, I mean, these kind of mirror what we've seen or what I've seen since I've been on, but if there's something that makes more sense,
we can experiment a little bit, and you know, maybe we throw up something different and you say, hey, I missed that old stat, and we'll, you know, we can always bring that back. So we'll experiment a little bit and see maybe what sticks and what you like, and just play with it a little bit.
Are you still doing a report to the city council? Do you still do that once a month? Okay. So same basic information.
Same basic. And it helped there too. You know.
Okay.
Like Jared and I said, Jared, he can look into all that. He'll see it. But the rest of us don't see it as easily sometimes. Okay. So there are better ways to bring it. And okay. You know, even, I think you said that the first weekend. And we'll experiment.
Thank you.
Leave it to Jared, and we'll figure out some good way to put that up.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Hey, Brian, your turn.
The big guy's a pretty good presenter. He's a hard act to follow.
Yep.
I was just saying the same thing.
Well, you can't go wrong with numbers and maps. Numbers and maps.
Positive numbers.
Positive numbers. I the numbers, but when I see a bit of consumer progress, I like the maps too. So thank you.
Alright.
See if I can. He's got too many numbers in there. Look at it. Let's keep going. 70 pages.
There's some trends right there. All right. Engineering report. I'm going to switch over here to sewers. Real quick. So this is a long list. This is everything that came through in December. And I will say we're still trying to kind of work out the presentation to commission. We did not review 131 projects this month, which is everything that's showing up in this list. There's a lot of things that came through risk reduction that we just simply didn't have any interest in looking at. It didn't really involve us. I will say we did do quite a bit of plan review. Every one of these large scales that came through, we at least had some involvement in plan review. Nothing really earth-shattering to report as far as new development coming in town. Probably the biggest thing that we're looking at right now is the point at Rogers. That's a multi-phase, multi-family development that we're looking at putting in on the south side of Pleasant Grove Road and west of Champions.
Is that the Warren Farm?
It's on the west side of Warren Farm.
Just south of the town.
Back in there.
Okay. Now, Warren Park is another one that's in the conceptual phase. And if you recall, I believe it was the last meeting that were approved to participate in those sewer studies. And so Warren Park, they've requested a sewer study for that large multi-phase development. So there's a lot happening in that
it's
area.
It's a big piece of property to be developed over time.
As far as the project status, there's not a whole lot of change. I'll highlight a couple of projects that are in design and under construction. But I did want to point out that the South 28th Place, that's the stuff north of Pleasant Grove Road near that intersection of Pleasant Grove and 49. That is being it's nearing RDOT approval. That has some federal funding in it for the streets, and so they're looking at sending that out to bid pretty quickly. So I'm thinking maybe a March bid date for that street project. Also, Walnut Street widening is scheduled to go back out to bid in February. So those will be coming up. And then we have several that are just under various stages of construction. The sewer rehab, that's just going to be steady work throughout the year. Pinnacle and Champion Sewer, I've got a slide after this. J.B. Hunt is substantially complete on the water and sewer side. I believe they're still working on getting that roundabout.
I'm sure you drive through it. It's nice to be able to come out of the subdivision and turn and go J.B. Hunt rather than going up. Because they've got two or three other roundabouts up on top of the hill. But they've opened it, so it's still work to be done, but it's open. So it's good.
Uptown and Oak Street, I think the only thing we have left at Uptown is reassembling the meter at Embassy Suites, which has been a kind of a problem area for us since they shifted the parking lot spaces over, so we lost our island, so we're having to reconstruct that meter. And then the Oak Street overpass, we still have a little bit of utility work to do on Oak Street. That should be finishing up in the next few months, I think. Then Poplar and 13th Street roundabout, that's a highly visible project that just there off of Walnut. So that'll be ongoing for several months now. We're right in the thick of utility work on that one.
What's the Poplar on hold for? The West Poplar, when you go over it, that shows from 7th to 1st. What is the... There's some hold up in this?
It's unclear if that's going to be included in this group of bond projects.
Those were got pushed off for bonds.
Those plans are... I believe the plans are 100% complete. They're just kind of sitting on the shelf. That is going to be a pretty big project for us at the city of Rogers, and I think they were trying to see what their funding picture was going to look like for the rest of this bond.
It was a finite amount of bond money, and there were more projects than there was money.
Right.
I can see some that got pushed around. I saw projects that were on the list that got pushed off the list.
So. I think what you're seeing is that any projects where they have matching funds from either federal dollars from Highway Administration or RDOT or trail or park money from the Walton Foundation, those are being prioritized. They don't want to give up those grants.
Sure.
And also not on this list, which is coming up, is going to be a sidewalk project on Hudson Road. We're not going to have a whole lot to do with that, but we will have some meters and a couple of hydrants to be relocated. So that's one thing that's not on my radar, but I've been told will be happening pretty soon as well. So.
Talking about Poplar, I was driving by the old superintendent's office. It was demoed. Is there something planned there in that spot?
They're going to have a roundabout there at 13th and Oak.
No. On Poplar, just downtown between, it would
fall. Across from the Arkansas Arts.
Right there at yeah. Arkansas Street.
Yeah. No,
across from Arkansas Arts Academy.
Yeah, the old superintendent's office for us old timers.
On Fifth Street, corner of Fifth right there.
Fifth and Poplar.
Fifth and Poplar, I'm not sure.
It is a pile of rubble as of today.
I asked Ed, and he didn't know either.
Yeah.
And he's on the planning commission. So. Lord, if that's another roundabout.
Whoops.
Okay, I'll go ahead and move on to Pinnacle Sewer. So this red line is the progress that we've had to date, and this has all been an open cut trench, and we've upsized from 10-inch to 18-inch sewer up to this point, and then 15-inch up to this point. Once they get just a little bit further up to this manhole, this section in here across the golf course and under the golf course is the section that we really need to have completed by the end of March and before they get too busy with their golf season. Fortunately, this is also the section that we're going to be pipe bursting, which we hope goes a little bit quicker. We've had some progress meetings. I know the contractors they've had trouble getting crews out there, and then they've had more trouble getting equipment out there more recently. The equipment company that is renting the pipe bursting equipment to them has been going through an audit, and it's taken a couple of weeks longer for them to get out there. They remain confident that this can be done, and according to the schedule, we'll see. That equipment's supposed to be on the ground next Monday.
Well, you're headed into troubled waters because you're cutting across that fairway, absolutely. And then you get over that sink, and you've got a little bit of elevation changes in there, but that's when it'll be. Well, probably a little more challenging. Plus, you got to, when you come across that signature hole there, you got to kind of come up that hill. So it's, the fun part looks like is yet to be.
So this is the pipe bursting. That's what they're going to be doing. You'll see it. That's the bursting head coming through the pipe, and it bursts through the PVC and drags the larger pipe behind
it. So it runs the same line that it runs
the same line. So this is
kind of cool.
While they're bursting through, this is why we hold out hope that process is going to go a little bit quicker, just because they're not opening up a trench all the way through the golf course.
That's what I said. How deep is that?
So this is about 6 feet, and it's a similar depth to what we're going to be bursting across a lot of the golf course. However, going across Country Club Drive, I think we've got a point there that's about 18 or 20 feet. And so that's going to vary in depth. And, if you don't have a whole lot of friction between the pipe and the soil, you can see that this is pretty loose soil in the depth, and that they're making really good progress. They're probably getting 3 or 4 inches out of each hit with that hammer. On the other end of the pipe, I'll show you what that looks
I
like.
Go watch that work.
See what you know.
So they've got compressed air that runs that handle that's being pulled from the opposite end.
That's fiberglass pipe.
This is actually polyethylene pipe. It's thick walled polyethylene pipe. So they'll pull that through, and we'll use the existing manholes, and we kind of cut a doghouse out and run that bursting head through the manholes. That pipe gets pulled through, and over several hours it has to relax, because you get a long piece of pipe and it kind of acts like a rubber band, so it'll relax. then they'll cut it out and reconnect it at the manholes. But you know, our hope is that this is the best method to, you know, minimize that disturbance to the golf course. It's really the only place we're disturbing is where it goes in and out of the pit close to the manholes, and you can't really see it here, but right here is where the pipe dives down and gets underground into that manhole. So there will be some disturbance to those fairways, but we're going to make sure it's minimized.
Well, as I saw you, as you kind of cut across, most of what you've done so far has been really out of the
right
when you come across there. It's got to be done, so it's not a matter of, and you'll do as best. So from a timing perspective, is it on plan and on budget?
It is. It's on plan and on budget. We're definitely behind on schedule.
Okay. How does that impact, because we've got, obviously, got a big event in September. Does this continue on? Do we get it all cleared out before we have the next LPGA?
By the time we get to this point, we'll be out of bounds on the golf course. We'll be working along the backside.
It's March. I didn't know if that was, if this was the plan or if it had been updated.
Right. Yeah. This is still the March 31st milestone. This is our expectation of when this is going to be done. We haven't been told no, it's impossible yet. So this is still our expectation. But as far as getting to Champions and beyond, I wouldn't think that we'd have any problem getting to Champions.
Yeah, I don't want that team to play.
No, that's what I said. If you can get to that by March, you mean, is it September usually? Is that when that event typically? Mm-hmm. Usually September. So it looks like you got plenty. Cool. Good job.
Just a little update on the solids handling dryer. So our design team is feverishly working on developing the 50% plans. And we're looking to receive those by the end of January so that we can get those plans over to our contractor, Crossland Heavy, to work up a guaranteed maximum price contract amendment. And so then that'll give us a couple of weeks to review that and put it back in front of commission in March. And that all of this is to meet that March 31st deadline to receive that, I believe it's about $2.3 million in ARPA grants. For this project, we have to be under construction by March 31st, and the ANRC has communicated to us that their definition of construction under this type of contract is a signed GMP and a notice to proceed. And so we're racing to get that done. And so this is kind of a preliminary schematic of the building location just south of the existing dryer building. Our designer is using a 3D modeling program, and that kind of allows us to go in there and look and kind of see how those spaces are going to lay out and make sure all the overhead crane can pick all the pieces of equipment off of that dryer without having any ductwork or anything else in the way. And so it's been a handy tool when you're designing a complex facility like this.
Brian, what were we looking at there on top of the, what is that depicting on top of those two runs?
Right.
Yeah, well, no, where your pointer, yeah, that stuff.
So these are the two Huber drying units that we've purchased from Huber. And then, the building gives us an idea of the layout and the space that we have to maintain between the dryer. We also have overhead conveyance for the cake material that comes in, and also the dried material leaving the facility. So there's a lot of overhead duct work.
Oh, okay.
and conveyance coming in and out that we have to account for in this building. And then we've got an enclosed section over here that's going to house two boilers, and then a small office and bathroom area and locker room in there as well.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. And then maintenance building on that. We originally We originally planned on demoing the existing maintenance building, and we had a price. It was going to be about $1.5 million to relocate that building somewhere else. And, you know, after looking at the layout, we decided that, you know, the bones of the structure are still pretty solid. So we're going to reskin this, add a bay to it, and just make it a little bit more functional space for those guys, and save some costs while we're at it. And like I said, looking at 50% plans by the end of January, you know, having 100% plans by May, and also ordering the equipment about the same time, so we can have that equipment delivered March, April of next year, and hopefully be nearing completion of construction by the end of 2025. I mentioned a little bit last time about the lead service line, the inventory that we're working on, and Brandon, our GIS analyst, put this together, just kind of some of the methodology that we've used to narrow down some of those meters, that some of those services that have the potential to contain lead components that we might want to go dig up and inspect. And so there are currently about 37,000 water services in the city of Rogers. We've narrowed that down to 4,800 service locations through looking at as-builts that were done during that period when lead was allowed to be used, and also looking at things like subdivision data, fire hydrant years, and just all these different data points that we track, as well as any information that we can pull from Benton County Assessor's Office for, you know, residential build dates and stuff like that. So it's just a lot of data crunching to get this number down to that 4,800 from the 37,000. We also brought some one of our retired employees that had been working here for 30 years, and he, one of those guys that pretty much knew where everything was underground. So
he was very.
So right now, the product of those, of all that data crunching and internal knowledge is some of these maps. And so, you know, we've narrowed it down to pretty much these central areas of town around downtown Rogers and over to about 13th Street, somewhere in there, where we could potentially have some lead. Or that require further investigation. Sorry, and so down at kind of a more detailed level here, you know, we're looking at some of these parcels and within subdivisions and narrowing down some of those services. So
you're primarily looking at meters.
Well, it's going to be there's two parts to it. So there's the part that's in between the main and the meter, the service line. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the private service line. And so we're required to have an inventory or know what those private service line materials are.
Oh, really?
But you know,
how do you do that?
Well, we narrow down the data as to what we believe is in there, and then once we get down to these 4,800, then we'll go out here and say, okay, we're gonna go dig up 10% of these services.
Oh, okay.
And if you know, if they're all plastic or, you know, whatever, then we can say, okay, we don't need to look in this area anymore. If we find one galvanized or a lead gooseneck or something like that, but we probably need to go and check a lot more homes in this subdivision. And so we haven't really gotten that fully mapped out yet as far as how many, what percentage we're going to dig up. But that's
ADH doesn't dictate you to have to go verify every one of them.
We'll
not
see.
Yet.
There any other questions for me?
Well, I would say it's a big project, but if you've been able to narrow down from 37,000 to 4,800, that's good. I mean, that's the right direction. And then to be able to take that 4,800, do a sampling to understand even, you know, more. But that's a big number from 37 to 48, and you feel good about the 48 and those that between the 48 and 37, obviously. We're not having to worry about that right now. So good, that's good work. Still a lot of work to be done, but at least you've narrowed down the scope of what you need to do.
Yeah, we've got a whole committee of guys working on this, and it's really been an effort in mapping and database work, and Brandon's been doing a lot of number crunching on all this stuff. So.
Is there a deadline on this from them?
So October of this year is the deadline to produce some maps and basically tell them these are the areas that we plan on looking at because we don't know what's here. And so we're well on our way to having that information available just from what we've done up to this point. And then past that, I think we're going to have several years to actually go out there and actually do the do the dig ups and the confirmations and everything. But by this October, we basically got to have a plan and say, hey, these are the areas that we've identified, and this is our plan to verify.
But is there ultimately, though, so we identify, we verify, and at some point, is there then going to be a requirement to replace all those? Do we know? Is that kind of...
As we find out, we'll do what's required. And the easiest way for me to understand it is, the first inventory you can have unknown as the item, as the piping material. That second one, you can no longer have unknown as a descriptor. You have to know exactly what it is.
Well, obviously, I would think that we would want to replace those over at some point, but that's going to be a costly, it's going to be a process, it's going to take time and a lot of money. And so depending on where that money comes from, if it's something that you're going to get help with, or
who's going to administer,
who's going to
lot of open. Well, on the private side of things, if that's not on us.
So that's one of the big questions. Is it, we're in a lot better shape than some. I mean, you think of some of these cities like, I don't know, Detroit or Cincinnati, or some of these cities who have had the majority of the growth, you know, from the 50s through the mid 80s, they're gonna be in a lot more shape than we are. We're fortunate enough to have the majority of our growth, you know, newer than 1990. So we're not going to have a whole lot of concerns. But we still need to know and have good data on some of those older areas.
That's interesting. Brian, thank you, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and your team of people.
Howdy, Todd.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Good afternoon.
Hello, sir.
So DMR finished out 2023 strong for December. I'm a page up and down. Where the heck did they get? This is my keyboard. Let's just do that. The industrial pretreatment, those guys are, you know, staying on track there. Pretty big month for surcharges comparatively. I'm not sure why. I didn't really say on that, but it was a little bit larger than normal. Fog. Food inspection. I believe I mentioned last time that we were having a little trouble with the little Chinese food restaurant place over here on 8th. They went ahead and relented and changed that out for us, so that problem resolved amicably with no further action. Everybody else is cooperating, and lots of stuff going on, though, like, you know, some broken lids and things like that. There's always things are happening whenever you've got infrastructure in use, but they're doing a good job. We began our training our new operator and solids handling technician, so those two new hires put me back to full staff. Not quite trained, but they're there. It's good to have the manpower, if not the knowledge. We
our solids ran into a little bit of issue here with this dryer oil circulation pump. We were down. We lost about a little over a week by the time we had holidays and equipment malfunctions and everything else. It put us behind, and our solids changed, which caused some issues in the dryer. We had three instances where the thing plugged up. We had to open it up and get in with crowbars and chisels and clean that thing out, pressure washer, you name it, whatever we could get in there to clean it, we did. We had to have that happen three times. It's not so much that we mind cleaning it out, but in this situation, when we're cleaning it, it's not running. So we're falling even further behind. So what I did is I got in contact with the Springdale Wastewater Treatment Plant manager. They've agreed to accept some of our Class B product, which is the stage before it goes to the dryer. They have a hopper there. They can feed it into their dryer with some excess capacity. We'll have to cover their operating costs for the additional run. They will have to transport it down, but we should be able to get to that as it warms up this week and the road's clear where it's safe to drive back and forth. It's not enough of an emergency at the plant yet to do that kind of risk. So both those are planned very careful. We did let DEQ know that was our plan as well, so no surprises there from them. Thanks to Brent's good work, we received a positive indication from DEQ regarding our tax bill for our salt handling project. That was a good deal. Overall, our I&I this month was kind of the one I'd pointed to last time that would kind of tell a tale. And I would say the ground has been saturated, and so far it's holding. We haven't had near the I&I that we had previous year. And ops. We had 9 events and about 3 inches of rain, very similar. Was 355 million gallons treated last December, so a comparable month, really. Whenever you look at 2.25 versus 3, same number of events, the 281 versus 355 is a significant improvement. So I'm very impressed. I'm hopeful that we've actually made some improvements. So very appreciative.
Like that was all blossom like.
It's hard to say. A lot of we'd like it to be, but they were doing some of the large manholes that had the caverns behind them, and a lot of those other repairs that were happening simultaneously. It's hard to point a finger at any one spot, but I just feel like the overall effort, from that they've been doing has been good work. So.
Wouldn't all the gutters that were tied in to the
We got a couple of those fixed. We got some private line stuff done. Overall, I just appreciate the focus that everybody has started putting into the I&I reduction. I think my opinion is I think we'll start to see, if we maintain this level of focus on it, we'll start to see improvements similar to what we've seen on leak reduction on the water distribution side, where we're not spending so much on pumping and treatment, and it'll save us overall on the size of infrastructure we have to build when we do these new, solids handling projects, when we do these headworks projects that we've got in engineering now. So it'll save us significant money long term. So I did include a copy of a letter for DEQ for your review as well.
What's the financial impact of that? The exemption? Was there a dollar amount attached to it?
I figured out that it would be exempt,
12 million worth of equipment. I was just going to say, but that's significant. So 12 million equipment exempt from the tax.
Okay. They also included, and I think this is just a variance process. I thought maybe it was more than that, but it appears that it's just a variance process. If you ask, because there could be potentially solids dryers, biosolids dryers that are in commercial use. So they don't exempt those unless you ask for that exemption.
Well done, because it had a list of items there. So
yeah overhead crane. I mean, it's significant. It's significant.
It's a really significant.
for this project.
I didn't know the numbers around it, but you've told me enough. It's 12 million. If you're exempt on the sales tax on that, that's significant money. Good. Well done. Job, Brent.
Any other questions?
Todd, thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks.
Johnny.
So, in December, I went to Denver and presented with Joseph out there on our leak detection and everything. So we met with our guys. We do a payday Friday meeting every payday with our employees. And this is the one thing that I wanted to, we shared with them in our last payday meeting. You know, and a lot of this falls back on them. You know, it's not what we do, it's what they do and how they approach it, and they attack the problems that arise and everything. And you know, so we wanted to make a point to share that with them and let them see the success that we're actually having. And it's the proven success and everything that is going along with that. And so, as I've been telling Brent and the guys when I come back, I figured out why I was in Denver presenting out there that our utility water system right now is a unicorn, as I'd like to say, because talking to people out there and meeting with people after for lunch and you know, at lunch and just coming up and talking and the problems that all these other utilities are having, and hopefully we are scheduled, weather permitting, maybe for a couple of the utilities to come out in February to kind of see how we're doing our system and everything. So I just want to kind of share with y'all some numbers. I'll skip through a lot of this because y'all know where we're at and all that stuff. You know, we had to present it out there to people from all over in different countries and different states and stuff. So as y'all know, the first thing that we did when we were looking at trying to figure out where we were having all of our problems before. You know, we was looking at possibly having to run another line out to Prairie Creek, and we was looking at possibly having to do something out there, put our ground storage back. So it was a huge cost that was going to cost us there. And so Brent decided at that point we was going to try to find the holes, in, as he says, our holes in our buckets, and we're going to fix that. So we went with these sensors and we put them in strategically out around the lake and everything where we're supposed to. You know, with the metal pipe, we could go 500 linear feet. With PVC, around 100 to 150. We did figure out after a little bit of time we needed to keep them away from transformers, generators, and busy intersections because we was picking up the vibrations and stuff from those and everything. So what happens is that when our meter reading, and I've explained this to some of y'all before, and I don't know who's all set in on it, and I don't know if Gary's seen it yet. So what happens is our meter readers go out and read. So we have this sensor stage throughout our system. And so when the meter reader goes and reads, that system stores 45 days of information. And so we got this leak sensor that we attach to the front of the copper that's coming up into the meter box, and it attaches there, and then it plugs into our reading sensor for our meters. And when we drive by, if there's a leak there, it's going to turn one of these dots right here, like you see green here, that would be red. That's telling us, hey, there's a possible leak out there and everything. Or it could turn it yellow. We could have a section of road there that would have yellow on it. So there's something going on to there, but it can't tell us exactly what it is and where it's at. It's just something that's picking up through that whole line. And then what will happen then is we'll send our leak detection guy out there. Our leak detection guy then will take all of his listening equipment, and he is going to take that, and then he's going to narrow it down to a point where the largest sound's coming from, and that's, we know we got a water leak there in that area, and that we need to go in there and fix it and everything. So
these are mainline leaks.
These are mainline leaks. It will pick up. They're not designed to pick up the water service because our meters are meant to do that. But now if the leak's bad enough, we have noticed in a couple of areas that these leak sensors will actually pick up a leak behind the meter also if it's bad enough and everything, so.
So again, this is new, this is not like that. So when I look at this, there was a report, unaccounted water. There's a water report in there talking about lost water. Is this what we're looking for, the lost water?
Yes.
And that's, this was, looking at that. So this is, we buy water, we sell water. And if we're buying, and there's a difference, and that's what we're trying to figure out, is the unaccounted for,
another way to think for unaccounted water is unrevenued water.
That's it.
Yeah, so, that when we talk here in a little bit, we'll talk about the non-revenued water, unrevenued water, and stuff like that. So that's what your lost water is. It's something that we're buying, like you said, we're buying and we're not getting paid for. That's what we're looking for here.
That's a 6% for 23. Yeah. That means we're losing 6% of revenues that we didn't have. It's an opportunity cost. We didn't have that.
The fire department plan.
Well, I mean, it could be.
just the average person, we don't think about these things. The infrastructure and what the impact. So
like these here, the green line showing us is everything's okay. Then here it's starting to develop a leak. It turns yellow, and then it'll turn red. And that's usually when it's going to show up on our sensor, red and like I said, yellow. And then you can see the difference in stuff here, like the large, the small. We're all our guys that pretty well read these. We pretty well look at them and know, okay, this is what we're looking at. That we've slowly learned to, that we've looked at them enough that we can dictate about what kind of leak we're looking for out there. This is just out around the lake area. So this is a compiled map of the water leaks repairs to identify. These are leaks that we have completed out there on our system. This is where we instituted this problem, was because, again, we have all those valleys and we have all those things out there that we have water lines running across that nobody sees. They go down in these gullies going up back up to somebody's house and lakes and stuff like that, to the running back to the back part of the lake island, I call them there, the addition over here on the other side. So we lose those, and nobody sees them if they break. They're just running right back down into the lake and everything. So
does it leave pressure down, upstream or downstream? Once you have that leak,
our system is
thinking of lose pressure somewhere on the.
Well, that was where we were losing it. What made us first initially look at this was our water tower. Mm-hmm. So our water tower out there during the summer, we was barely maintaining them, our minimum pressure in that tank when everybody turned their irrigations and tucked their showers first thing in the morning. Our tank was almost dropping below where if it would have went a little lower, we would have had to issue a boil order out there because we couldn't supply them enough water, that their demand was too high. So yes, you would lose the pressure and stuff back there, but we don't have pressure sensors in our system looking for that pressure. We just maintain it by either looking at our water towers and stuff like that. Me and Brent, that's kind of our next step is we're wanting to look at possibly, Joseph wants us to look at a different way, but after sitting through some of the classes out there at that conference, I learned a lot about pressure and regulating the pressure and increasing the lives of our meters by regulating the pressure inside our system and everything else. So, normally we rely on the homeowner to put a pressure reducing valve behind the meter, like you do.
If you're in the line and you don't have the pressure, you prove 11 cents.
Yeah, so that we're looking at possibly putting some in there to start helping relieve some of our pressure playing areas there to increase the life of our pipe and increase the life of our meters. Brian has got already, we're in the process of changing out, replacing some lines out here that, where we've had a ton of leaks up here in this area right here. You can see all those leaks. We're in the process now of replacing that one because basically when we go out there to make a repair, we was trying to figure out how to put a clamp on top of another clamp, because it was just clamp to clamp to clamp as we was going down through there. So. And it's in the plans here later to relay this one along Highway 12 out here where all these leaks are and everything. And that's just because when we're going in there and we're looking at it, that pipe is very bad. It was put in, no bedding, put right in on rock.
What are those pipes made of?
cast out there in that area, so.
This is
yeah.
really the holy grail of what we're trying to figure out as a data-driven decision, you know, where to spend all this money.
Sure.
And if you ask 10 different guys out back, they'll tell you, well, this line, this line, this line. We can look at this and go, it's very clear where we need to spend some resources.
And it's also, you know, you put the numbers together, it's okay, you got 6% loss. Okay, there's a revenue to that. And there's also a cost to fix. And at some point, you got to go, okay.
Well, before we add these.
Do we get to the fix, or do we let it run a while longer because of the cost?
Before we had these, we were working the same amount of hours. Our leak detector gentleman was going out there and doing all the work, laying them down. It's just a very inefficient process. And in, what, 6 years, we still didn't have this kind of grouping. We had pretty much a scattershot. You wouldn't have felt good spending money on any of them. And just within a few years of this now, well, quite a few years, but this really ties it in very well. And you can see the see where you need to spend them.
So another thing that helped us that we kind of added to this presentation was the fiber people. You know, we got all these fiber optic people in town. Well, the whole thing is there is like, you know, they're boring. They clip the bottom of the water line. We might not see that until it just becomes a point that it's finally cracked the line enough that it's making a lot. Because, you know, it's embedding. It's going to act like a French drain. And everything else. So these have helped us get out there after a boring company's been through, find the leak, get it fixed while it's small. The smaller the leak, you know, the less work for our guys, for one thing, but less repair work. You know, we're not rebuilding an intersection or rebuilding a bunch of curb and gutter because it's blown out and stuff like that. So that's another added benefit that we have, because our philosophy before, because when we first started putting these in, we were just going to stay in the lake area out here, you know, Horseshoe Bend and Prairie Creek area. And, you know, because our philosophy before was there's enough people in town, they're going to see water come up, you know, and driving by, we're going to see it. Well, that philosophy kind of changed when we found some of the leaks that we found out there and stuff, because now we're starting to put them out through town, and we're starting to catch those leaks, and that's where the bore companies are coming in. But we're getting to see a lot of that there also. So, you know, and it's been a benefit here, because what was, we thought, and we'd pick up a leak and there's no water coming up there. Well, we'd finally kind of just, yeah, we got a leak, and we'd go out and we'd fix it. Well, then the guys would kind of trace the water out, and we'd find it going into a storm drain, you know, about two blocks down, where it'd run down there and finally hit a storm drain and run out into the area down there and stuff. So
I think on situations that you've got on the screen like that, where a contractor has done that, do we have the opportunity to rebuild that contractor?
Yes, we did.
We've got to fix it. They created the problem, and they have, and they reimbursed.
We've got a permitting process that allows us to go after them. They actually have bonds on them.
Yeah.
Or if they want another bonder.
So we're not out the money. We will be reimbursed at some level.
Yeah.
Good.
Johnny, those sensors, those just stay in place, or are they temporary?
They stay in place. They're permanent. That was what Brent was saying. Before, our leak guy would go out to the lake. He'd put his sensors out. We'd log overnight. Okay, we didn't catch anything. And then we'd go to the next section, and then we'd just work our way back in town and then work through town. And it'd take 3 years, 4 years, you know, even when the town was smaller, to get through the whole town. Well, what would happen a lot of times, you know, we thought could happen, you know, which it probably did, was we was out there 2 or 3 weeks later, bam, we have a leak out there that we're not going to be out there for 2 to 3 years to find, you know, so.
Or worse, you get on that line at Putnam or something.
Yeah.
We found two leaks.
Yeah, we're good. We found two leaks, And
3 months later, you get four more leaks.
So what helped us was we found repetitive leaks, and what we're talking about repetitive leaks was, Brent made a perfect segue into this, is, you know, we found the bigger leaks, because those are going to be the ones that make the most noise. Well, these are permanent out there, so we find the big ones. The next time we read, we find the next biggest one, and then we fix it. And then, so now slowly, we've got to a point where, you know, sensor-wise, it's showing us our system's tied out there. We have no leaks, or we have nothing else, you know, and stuff. So we get to catch the leaks early. Again, so we're not repairing a lot of driveways. We're not repairing a lot of streets and curbs and gutters and all of that stuff. So the non-revenue water here, basically, when we started this, towards the end of 2018, or I guess about the middle of 2018, since we installed those, we has decreased our purchasing by 150 million gallons. And you can see here, and it's a funny thing, we go to the Benton Water quarterly meeting, and you know, this comes up quite often, you know, how, what are y'all doing, you know, and stuff, and that, and how are y'all doing it? Because you can see here, as our purchases have went down, like here in 2022, our purchases were down while our revenue and our everything else was up. Our purchases are going down, and that's what they don't understand, is how we can be tracking down with our purchases while our city's growing and our sales are going up, you know, and it's because we're selling more water.
How do our numbers compare to theirs, like Springdale, Bentonville?
Do you have that?
I don't have that.
We're on a downward trend. Yeah. They're all on.
They're on an upward trend. And, you know, we're talking.
We like that.
Quite a bit on an upward trend from us. Well,
that's,
and everything.
That's good work. I mean,
that's awesome, Johnny.
That's a good story to tell.
So here you can see our non-revenue water rolling average continues to decrease. Basically what we are figuring is that we're saving over $200,000 annually on the water purchases and everything.
Good job.
So where is that one? This is the one that kind of amazed me. This is one that Joseph threw in there with some data that Brent had shared with him and stuff. In 2019, we were on for per customer. We was 52.3 gallons per day per customer was what we was losing in 2019. 2022, we dropped that to 20 gallons per customer. So you say the 6%. I can tell you that most utilities would love to have 6%. That's the unicorn that we have. When we're in that five to eight range, a percentage, that's very unheard of without falsifying numbers and doing a lot of that stuff, you know. And
that's not what we've got here.
That's not what we've got here. These are actual numbers. They've been checked. But you know, I wouldn't have presented on it if it was that case. Again, you know, the fact is that most utilities, you know, they're upwards of 20 to 30%.
It wasn't that long ago. We were 17 if these numbers have come down. And the other part, and it's just when times are good, people kind of look away.
Yeah.
We're blessed because we have a plentiful water supply. If you're out in some of these communities where we hear often that they don't have the water supply, losing water like that is huge.
Yeah,
and so we've got a good thing going, but we're also looking at it now. We've gone from 52 to 20, and I mean, say that's good work. I mean, that's what we need to be doing. So, or y'all need to be doing. I'm not doing that.
So again, you know, he's talked about leaking, doing some district metering. We think I want to look at more of the pressure and stuff. You know, the thing is here, as Jerry was saying, you know, when I was out there, you know, you hear all these stories about these states and parts of the United States that don't have the water. And that's who I talked to the most out there, California, Colorado, New Mexico, and stuff like that. Some of Texas, I didn't realize some of Texas was as bad as what they were. Georgia, you know, you heard about all the western states out there. You didn't know about the southern states that were having the problems. Georgia's one, Tennessee's one, Alabama's one, you know, that their water is low. They've actually, you know, the health department's actually put people into positions now to start monitoring that water in Georgia, Tennessee, and stuff like that and everything, because and we don't want to get to that point, so, you know, and that's a benefit there. On the collection side, you know, Todd brought up an excellent point. You know, you know, we've basically kind of focused one guy on helping with the I&I stuff. That's kind of his job, to go in, review videos, manholes. He's looking at all that stuff. Then he's taking it to engineering. Engineering's evaluating it along with him, and then that's where we're coming up with these projects for pipe bursting and all of that stuff. So he's doing a great job collecting all that information and finding our worst problems areas that we're trying to get fixed the fastest and stuff. So I'm hoping we're making a difference out there for Todd. I know that our guys now, it's a challenge. It's not, you know, our guys is not taking it where, you know, laying down. It's become a challenge for our sewer guys out there to find as many problems as they can find, you know, and everything, because they feel it's weird. You know, they talk to you and they say, well, I feel defeated, you know, because we're not making any headway and stuff. So, you know, Todd, thank you for sharing that, because that is something I can take back to them. You know, because again, like I said, everybody's taking it as a challenge now to make that I&I lower as we have the water and stuff and everything. So, but any questions?
Johnny, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Brent.
I just welcome Jared again. Nice work. Mm-hmm. Hold us all to a new level there. But, none of this could happen without the teams we have. You know, when you go into utilities, usually they have a set way of doing things, and you don't come in and say, well, why don't you do that? That's, you know. Everything you throw these guys, everything, any one of them, they take it and run with it. And none of this would happen without that attitude, so appreciate that. I've got resolution number 2401 in front of you. For renewal of a contract for printing and mailing services. We're going to renew the contract, or we would like to, with your permission, renew the contract with DFI. If you recall, DFI was bid out by, had a lower bid from Doxum right about the Tyler transition, and we just about couldn't put bills out for a month or two. And DFI jumped back in there, helped us put a contract out. They've just performed with flying colors, and we see no reason other than to renew that. So we'd be looking for an approval of Resolution 2401 to renew that contract with DFI.
I'll make a motion that we approve Resolution number 24-01, authorizing renewal of a contract for printing and mailing services for Rogers Water Utilities.
Second.
You got a motion and a second. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? All right, Brent, you want to keep going?
Thank you. Yes, the next resolution is 24-02, designating authorized signatories for depositories for the Rogers Water Works and Sewer Commission. This is to finally clean up our signatories. We have a new controller. We can take Jennifer off, and as you know, everybody from the mayor on down, that list is on the back, that has to sign this. We just wanted to wait until we had everyone in place, and we just need your approval to put these folks on the new signatory list and put it through and get it in motion.
I move approval for resolution 24-02, a resolution designated authorized signatories for depositories for the Rogers Water Works and Sewer Commission and the Rogers Water Utilities and for other purposes.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Resolution 2403. It's to appoint an organizational representative for certain litigation and for other purposes. The litigation is the Three Flags litigation. It's proceeding to the pleading stage and discovery stage, and we're going to be getting into what actually happened in those transactions that are the subject of the litigation. So I'm going to need an organizational representative for the commission as well as RWU. I think Brent's a good choice for organizational representative for both the commission and RWU. Brent's very familiar with all those transactions that are at issue with litigation, and he can
he's well suited to verify discovery responses and other papers and work with me on the litigation. So I'd be glad to answer any questions. Ask for your approval of resolution 2403.
I'll make a motion that we pass resolution number 24-03, a resolution appointing an organizational representative for certain litigation and for other purposes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? All right, congratulations, Brent.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Good job.
Glad at you.
All right, do we have any other business? Then we are adjourned.
The only thing I will say is, from a consumer perspective, everything that you just said about the team and the work that y'all do, we take it for granted as consumers. What we do is we turn the water on, we have an expectation it's going to be pretty clear water, and when I flush, it's gone. So it's, you know, when you start kind of looking at what you all do, you know, it's really amazing. So thank you for what you're doing. But again, we all take for granted that we've got the good clean water and we don't deal with stuff like that. So thank you for letting us do that as consumers.